Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
Sinéad O'Connor was always outspoken and progressive in her views on the issues within Irish society and beyond as well. Joining me now to reflect on Sinéad's contribution to a changing Ireland is Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD for Dublin South Central, and Lindsay Erner-Byrne, who's Professor of Irish Gender History at University College Cork. You're both very welcome to the programme. And thank you very much indeed for joining us. I might turn to you, Breed Smith, first of all, and you're very welcome. How are you reflecting on Sinéad O'Connor's passing today?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Cormac. And I do think it's important to say a huge sympathy to the condolences to the family and all those directly affected. I know the whole nation feels affected. And
yeah,
I think it's quite extraordinary, the reaction across the whole country to the death of this woman, that it's just been just such an outpouring. I don't think we've ever seen it before from the death of an artist. And we've had many good ones that have died, but she was particularly outstanding and brilliant. And I had the privilege of spending an afternoon with her, drinking tea and chatting about politics and women's rights and all around the time of the X case. Eamon McCann, the writer and socialist from Derry, who's a friend of my family's, had dropped her off to the house and said, would you stay with Sinéad for a while? I have to do an interview at RTE. And I said, yeah, right, okay, no bother. I was absolutely charmed to do so because it was at the height of her career and her fame. And
this was early 90s, is that right?
92. She was actually in Dublin to campaign for the release of the young 14-year-old rape victim who the state had held back from having an abortion. That was known as the X case. And it was a huge outpouring of anger and determination to allow this young woman to travel. And so she and I sat in the kitchen in Rialto for about 4 hours, just chatting, drinking tea. And it was really, really interesting. And I found her a fascinating and intelligent and understanding woman. And, you know, even just when we talked about the right to choose and the significance of that in the context of Irish history, and the treatment of women in the history of the Irish state, she really got it. Like she said, you know, and no prompting from Breed Smith or anything. In fact, I could have learned loads from her, that unless you talk about the right to choose, there's no point in talking about women's rights, because they're not separate issues. They're intrinsically connected, that we have the right to control our own bodies. And I do remember at the demonstration that she spoke at the GPO, there was a huge big rally and a march and a meeting at the GPO. And she then, and that was back in 92, called for a new referendum on the question of abortion. 26 years later, in 2018, we had that referendum, the repeal referendum, which I'm delighted she was alive to see that it was successful. Mm-hmm. But
the courage and the intelligence that you mentioned, other people, Breed, have mentioned that as well. Can I ask you how engaged she was in other issues, or was she sucked into that issue because it was extremely high profile at the time?
Absolutely not. She was universally concerned about questions of oppression, discrimination and injustice. And, you know, we discussed all those things. We just happened to be, you know, slap bang in the middle of that issue at the time. But, for example, she refused to play in Israel in solidarity with the Palestinian cause. She played at a Nikki Kelly gig in the late 80s when it was neither profitable nor popular to do so. Nikki Kelly was a victim of the justice system that went wrong. And she also was a huge supporter of trans rights, the rights of people with HIV, mm-hmm. and indeed anti-racism was in her bones and in her guts. And we know that from the speeches and the spoken word stuff that she's done. A big anti-racist. I met her on a march then subsequently from the X case, along with Christy Moore and, you know, all the famous Mary Black and all the famous artists at the time.
So she was very much an anti-racist march. She was very much an activist, as much as being a singer and a performer as well, and a songwriter. So will you stay with me, Breed Smith, for a second? Because
sure.
Some people will listen to what Breed Smith is saying and they'll say, isn't that great? She was fantastic. But Professor Lindsay Erner-Byrne, it is very hard, especially for younger listeners, to understand how difficult it would have been to do that in the Ireland of the time, in the early 90s and before that even.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, she started from the very beginning. I mean, she was sort of 18 and 19 in 1986 when she said some of the most radical things that really there was nobody else who had the courage to say. And there was no kudos in getting it. There was a lot of danger. In the mid-1980s, there were still mother and baby homes. You still risk losing your liberty if you were seen to misbehave as a woman. And she came straight out there at sort of 19 years of age. I looked back on the first interview that the Irish Times did with her, and she understood straight away what the music industry, for example, would try to do with her, commodify her beauty, commodify her sexuality. And she completely rejected that. And was one sentence I was really struck by that she said in that interview. She said, "I like to say I'm not a man or a woman." That was 1986. So she was just she was so extraordinary in so many ways. And in some senses, you know, people say she was ahead of her time. She wasn't actually. I think what her real power was is she was very much of her time. But unlike the rest of us, she was willing to call it out and to say it. She had a kind of moral clarity that took the rest of us, at least took us another 30 years to have the courage to see and say the same kind of things that she did. But she was a lone warrior. Yeah. I think that's what's
different. But the context was that she operated in an Ireland anyway of convention and a conservative straitjacket, and she was of her time, but certainly she had to break those shackles, didn't she?
But I think that's what's remarkable about breaking them, you know, is that you're actually kind of born into them and in a sense shaped by them, but you still have the courage. So in other words, you know exactly what the danger of speaking out against that consensus is, and you still do it. In some senses, in the mid-80s, when she came to the fore, she was still really, really young. It was actually almost a worse time for women than the 70s. It was a period of real backlash. We'd had the very contentious 1983 abortion referendum. There was a real kind of surgence of the right. And she was out there as a very young woman in an industry that was particularly toxic for women. Mm-hmm. And she was able to see it straight from the get-go. And again, I think for younger people, what's difficult to appreciate too is that you didn't have social media. So she didn't have other people also speaking out in the same way. There were relatively few platforms for women, and those platforms were really, you know, contingent. You had to behave in a certain way to get them. And she saw that when she tore the picture up of the Pope in 1992 and several platforms closed for her. The tremendous courage that took. And on that night, what she said is, I'm paraphrasing her, but it was something along the lines of, go after the real enemy. Mm-hmm. And she was referring to child abuse and the way in which the Catholic Church had covered it up. That was 1992. Extraordinary.
We spoke with a music executive who was beside her and signing her up with EMI Records at the time. And he was in the audience at Saturday Night Live. And this is, people can listen back to this from earlier in the programme. And he described how it was all going upwards, even during her performance. And the other executives were ready to sign her up. We'll do the deal on Monday. And then the photo was ripped of the Pope. And the atmosphere changed, and the prospects and her future changed. But what's interesting, if I can bring in Breed Smith again, is that this is in the absence of Twitter and social media and a plethora of media platforms, that when Sinead O'Connor, for example, appeared in Ireland on the Late Late Show or other big television or radio programmes, she was willing to use her platform to rail against social injustice when she didn't really have to.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's a real testimony to her courage. And her courage was contagious. And I think people loved it because she said what we all knew and what we all wanted to say. But she had a platform and she used it not just to play and sing beautiful music and to, you know, rail against the machine, so to speak, but also to, you know, speak to the truth of the day. And I think that's why people admired her. And, you know, you should talk to Eamon McCann, the Derry journalist, at some stage. He has a great story about how on the X case march to the Dáil, when the crowd got to the Dáil, and it was a huge, big demonstration. There's been footage of it on the television. She was one of the ones leading it off. And she walked through the Dáil gates. Nobody stopped her. It wasn't like nowadays, if anybody looked crooked at the Dáil gate, you'd be having to go through reams of security. Eamon McCann followed her. They both walked into the foyer of Dáil Éireann, Leinster House, and demanded to see Albert Reynolds. And Albert Reynolds eventually came down. And when he came down, he was advised by PJ Mara, the guy who does the press secretary at the time, well known for his involvement with Charlie Haughey. He said, "I think you better listen to her." And he spent an hour or more talking to her. And that talk, real initiative, courage, spontaneity, incredible, and just determination.
Yeah.
She started out saying, I need to talk to Albert Reynolds. You have to let this young girl go. And she got to talk to
my
Albert
goodness,
Reynolds.
That is incredible. Incredible conviction, yeah, and courage. Can I ask you, Lindsay Erner-Byrne, as an historian, finally, where do we place her in terms of being an agent of change in Irish society? I mean, do you place her with Countess Markovitch, Bernadette McCallisky, Mary Robinson? Is that the right company? And I'm not kind of putting words in your mouth at all. Where do you place her?
No, I think she's among one of the key figures who were really influential for a generation, certainly of younger women, but also constantly right up to the very end talking about mental health. So I think in terms of those key figures that have helped to reshape and define public opinion, push the boundaries of public discourse, she's certainly among some of the key ones, a handful of them.
Lindsay Erner-Byrne.
And I think one other thing to say is that it cost her, right? So we talk about courage and all that, and we forget that that actually cost her profoundly, I think, both in terms of her own mental health, but also, you know, it was difficult. Some of that period when she spoke out, she had long periods of isolation. She spoke about that herself. So I think we need to remember, too, that she paid a price for it as well, and she did so willingly, repeatedly.
Yeah, it would have been a lot wiser for her commercially, wouldn't it? To button up, let's say, and not talk about the injustice or not make that point. But she was true to her convictions throughout her life. It is fascinating to talk to you on such a very sad occasion. Professor of Irish Gender History at University College Cork, Lindsay Erner-Byrne, thank you very much indeed. And People Before Profit TD, Breed Smith, thank you as well.